Just another wartime consideration was difficulty in getting things in. If you were a businessman, it must have been...
Well, it was almost impossible to get freight that your freight hadn't either been pilfered or broken into or just robbed completely. And food was a chancy thing. Mm-hmm. The canned food came through very well, but fresh produce was a nightmare. You had a standing order with any particular store that you did business with, and if they got any fresh produce, you got a cut of it if it was worth carrying out of the store.
So it was just almost beyond consumption when it would get here.
Well, when you figured that it took 8 days to come up by train, and until they started having air freight, you never knew whether you were going to get the shipment in a condition that you could even sell. Mm-hmm. We got magazines even after we opened the drugstore that were over a month old.
So you had, of course, radio, so you knew things that were happening at the or simultaneously. So that
you had a fairly good idea. There was KFAR was operating then, mm-hmm. and it was a wonderful thing to have a radio station that you could listen in and get the news and
know it was pretty
what
current.
Was going on.
Made you feel part of the rest of the world. Despite the shortages, you didn't really have rationing as other places did.
On some things.
Right. Meat and sugar, I think, were rationed elsewhere.
Well, you just didn't get any meat.
So you didn't have your little blue and red tags.
Unless the grocers got meat, you didn't get any. Because you just got what was available. Mm-hmm. And it was divided pretty equally.
Yeah, so everybody had a share of what was available.
And any of them that had been to the States had their sugar ration or their ration coupons from being out there. Mm-hmm. Because if you went to visit somebody, you immediately went to the rationing board to get your coupons, or otherwise you
wouldn't eat.
Well, no, you shorted someone else.
Right, yeah. Yeah, that was quite a time for everybody, certainly here, because of the isolation and also the potential threat.
And the primary delivery went to the armed forces. Mm-hmm. They got first call on everything.
Yeah, which is certainly true in situation.
Any wartime situation, they have to have their supplies first or they can't operate.
Yeah, so Army got first pick.
Well, whether they got to pick or not, I wouldn't say that, but they did get the first draw on the merchandise.
I imagine there were some local farms operational at that time. Potato farms.
Kramer's Dairy and Bentley Dairy were both operating at that time. And you could get fresh milk when it was available.
Mm-hmm. Were there any chicken farms at that time? Egg production?
No. There were a few people that raised chickens.
Just for their own
consumption. You had to know someone pretty well to get a fresh egg.
You knew you were a good friend if you got a fresh egg. So I've heard people talk about boat eggs that came up.
They were cold storage eggs.
Storage, yeah, and they were pretty ripe. Very flavorful, if that's what you like in an egg, but certainly not a commercial enterprise up here at that time, from what I've heard.
No. Because you figured the cost of heating on anything that you raised up.
And then you could get, I suppose, local potatoes and local carrots. Yes. So at least you had...
They were stored in underground storage.
Oh, like a root cellar. So if you, did you have, well, in Grail, I suppose you had a little bit of acreage with your cabin?
No, actually, it was just a, city lot size.
So.
But almost anyone would let you raise a garden if you wanted to.
We had victory gardens, or as
we
call
them. There were victory gardens all over town.
So didn't have a lawn, but you had a zucchini patch or lettuce or whatever.
Oh, they didn't raise much zucchini up here in those days. But
the basics.
Lots of carrots and potatoes and
things that stored well, I suppose, was the main concern. It was before the days of indoor freezers. We certainly had an outdoor freezer operational for a long time. So after the, well, do you remember when the war ended? It was in August of 45, was it?
Oh, I remember D-Day.
Oh.
Because the whole town turned out. They were so delighted that they had moved into the Europe.
Yes, yeah, that's the 50th anniversary.
Everyone was on the streets.
Just, so that was a real celebration.
Yes, it was. It was as big a celebration as when they, when the other, the rest of the operation was finished.
I guess people really felt hope at that time.
Yes, yes, it had been a very discouraging time. They lost so many of the big battleships, and there were so many islands lost that were we were dependent on for air traffic and to get the men back and forth.
Yeah, so that was really the turning point in the war. And
well, it was certainly the turning point in the hope. Because prior to that time, they were fighting on two different fronts. Well, actually more than that, if you figure that they went in from several different places on the globe.
Yeah, truly, World War, we covered the globe in those days.
Yes, it really was.
So after the war, I guess that was a turning point in your lives, didn't you open the first pharmacy that your husband had?
Yes, we opened the drugstore on 2nd Avenue. We rented a building from Hulda Ford, who was a town character at that time.
I was going to say, that name sounds familiar. Yeah. What do you remember of her?
Oh,
she was quite well. Wasn't she the one that was quite wealthy?
She owned a lot of property, and whether or not you count property as wealth. But yeah. She was very slight, small woman, and she was very good to us. Not always reasonable, but very good to us.
A shrewd businesswoman?
No, I wouldn't say that. She had bought a lot of the property when they felt that the mines were going to close, and people wanted to go back to the States, and they owned property here and didn't have money enough to go, and she financed the trip up and took the property as security.
So she saw a future in the town.
She was definitely a town character.
So you said opening day was quite a festivity at the drugstore. You describe what all went into the preparation and the event?
They didn't think that we could ever get it open. In the meantime, the rest of the stores in town were bought up by one company. And they all the other three stores were all owned by the same
company. And this was in a concentration of two or three city blocks, too.
That's right.
So you really had to do it bigger and better.
Well, it wasn't any bigger, but they built our own fixtures. You couldn't buy drugstore fixtures. And so they worked all 1 year getting the thing together.
Mm. So the drugstore was, of course, the pharmacy, but I think of a drugstore of that era as having a soda fountain, perhaps.
Oh, no.
Nothing like
no,
that.
No soda fountain.
Oh, so
there was a soda fountain in the co-op, but neither of the other drugstores had soda fountain.
So it was strictly pharmacy and then sort of
first aid supplies and
sundries.
And sundries.
Things like that. Mm-hmm. So what did you do for opening day? Invite all the people to come?
We didn't have to invite them. They just absolutely showered us with flowers. I think we must have had 20 or 30 big bouquets of flowers sent to us because everyone had been so skeptical about whether or not that we could ever get open because the merchandise was short. Mm-hmm. And getting it here was even more difficult.
So I guess the wartime shortages went far beyond the war.
Oh, yes. Yes. You didn't know what you could get.
Or when.
Or when.
At
or
that time,
if.
Things were still, a few things, I guess, were coming by air at that time.
Well, there wasn't much air freight until after that following winter after we opened the drugstore. Mm-hmm. I think they started shipping stuff by air freight. There was an airline started just strictly to ship
sort of like UPS
produce. It was Golden North Airways.
Mm-hmm. And then I guess for some
and they we shipped a lot of merchandise that way, but you had to know what was worth the air freight. You couldn't just ship anything.
So for bulk
and there was a boat strike that first year that we opened, and we didn't get any freight for quite a while because of the boat strike.
At that time, the highway, the Alaska Highway, would have been open.
No.
Even then, there wasn't the commercial traffic.
No.
That was to follow a little bit later. So you just had two ways, basically, to get
Well, you could ship by boat and by train, or if you knew someone that had trucking that was hauling stuff by truck during the summer, you could ship it up by truck. But you had to realize that if you shipped it by train, you were 10 to 14 days before you could possibly get it. And if you shipped it by truck, if you were real lucky and everything went well, you might have your freight in a week during the summer.
Summer. So truck travel would have been restricted pretty much to the summer before they really had year-round maintenance on
well,
the roads.
Well, there... when they started building the airfields down along, when they made up their mind they were going to build a road to the States, and then they built airfields down the Richardson and down the where the projected highway was going to go, the stuff to build those airfields was hauled in by truck. Mm-hmm. A good deal of that, and that came in for 2 or 3 years after Pearl Harbor, because they were quite a while in building that road.
Yeah, I guess it was completed in about 8 months, but it was not a road like we would expect today, that it was
just a good road
trail.
If you could get over it.
a lot of mud holes in the spring, and I guess.
Well, and there were glaciers in the winter.
Winter, so it was pretty tough go but, for a long time.
We were down on the highway before we started on the drugstore. My husband worked hauling freight for the Air Force and for the building the highway.
Mm-hmm. So he saw it during the construction times?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So when was the first time that you rode on the highway?
Well, I had ridden on parts of it, but to make it clear through from one end to the other, so to speak, friend and I drove a car from Detroit.
You're not necessary.
You drove from... Go ahead.
We picked up a new car in Detroit and drove it back up the highway. Before the... Well, you could get through, but there was limited accommodations, and you had the list of things that you had to carry in your car.
Mm, all spare parts. What year would that have been?
It was 47.
Oh, that was really early on for civilian travel.
Yes.
Yeah, so you had probably two or three spare tires that you carried on top of the car? Or?
No, we had a brand new car, and we only changed one tire coming up, so the road wasn't too bad.
Yeah, that speaks well.
And we didn't even have to change that ourselves.
I was gonna say,
we stopped and were getting out to change the tire, and some nice gentleman came along and offered to do it for us.
Oh,
so nice. You can't beat that.
Yeah, that's a good roadside good Samaritan, I'd say.
Well, that was customary up here at that time. Mm-hmm. You never passed anybody that was down on the road.
Mm-hmm. Always checked to see what was wrong.
Make sure that they were all right, and if anyone was out walking, and the weather was cold, they got a ride. You didn't leave anyone abandoned out on the road. It was quite a ways between stops.
Yeah.
Any place where they could get any help.
Yeah, you're really on your own.
Well, you were at the mercy of the Good Samaritans on the road.
Unfortunately, a few of those came along at the right time. Yeah. So you stayed, getting back to Fenton's Pharmacy that you opened in 1946. Did you work in the store with your husband, or by that time were your children?
Yes. No, both of my children were born after that.
Oh, so you worked.
I worked with him during those first years, and even after the children were born, I worked a good deal in the drugstore.
Mm-hmm. Waiting on customers and... helping.
Not anything that needed to be done.
You probably grabbed a broom here and there, too.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Then when the Northward building was built, I guess in 1952...
Well, it was started before that, but they actually...
Completed in 52.
Let the tenants in 52. Started letting them in. They weren't all the...
So was your business one of the first commercial businesses?
I think there were maybe two or three. The grocery store that was on the corner of the building was in there before we got our store open. The bank was there. And I think that we were third or fourth.
Third or fourth. Mm-hmm. Did you live in the Northwood building?
No.
You just had your business there. I guess that was quite an architectural feat. It was, well, I don't know how many stories high it is. At least
eight.
Eight stories. That must have been
the
tallest building.
It was a big building for this area at that time.
Yeah, so I guess it's referred to as the Ice Palace.
Well, Edna Ferber put that name on it when she wrote the book. Because of the
I guess because of
aluminum siding.
I wondered why it was called that, and I guess it was because of the aluminum siding. So what other things do you remember about establishing business at that time in the Northwood building?
Well,
Did you double the size of the store as compared to the old one?
It was quite a bit larger. It was almost three times as big.
And so you just moved not even a block away.
It was about a block and a half away, hardly more than that.
Mm-hmm. When did you go into the Northwood building? In the summertime, or?
Oh, they were stocking that store for almost a year. It took that long to get the merchandise.
So in the meantime, you just continued to operate?
Well, we had to ship all the fixtures in and get them.
By fixtures, you mean racks
the
and
counters. And that sort of thing. You have to have some place to put your merchandise. You don't just bring it into an empty space.
Right.
And we had ordered the fixtures from one of the big fixture wholesalers in the Washington area, and they were all shipped up and assembled up here. And then the building had to be painted. Location had to be painted, and it took a lot of time.
So even
stocking the shelves took a lot of time. Mm-hmm. Putting the merchandise on the shelves and deciding where it was going to go and everything.
Mm-hmm. So even though it was a local move, it was every bit as complicated as one that might be several miles away, just because of the nature of the business and all the merchandise equipment that you had to handle. Now, at this time, did you open up your beauty store?
No, I didn't open my beauty shop until, it was quite a while after that.
So you continued working with your husband?
Yes, I worked in the drugstore. And then there was a lot of talk about that people would have to have a cosmetologist license to sell cosmetics.
Oh.
And I went outside and got my license, back to school, and then I came up and got registered as an Alaska license, because there was difference in the requirement of the hours that different states required to have a cosmetology license.
Oh, so really, because of the cosmetics, that's how you got into being a beauty shop operator, ultimately?
Well, I had been selling cosmetics, and I had been, I'd had training in several of the big salons at that time. I had training from Charles the Ritz and from Elizabeth Arden and an outfit called Primrose House.
Mm-hmm.
And then the things just worked together. I got interested in working with the customers directly, and then I opened the beauty shop.
And that was in the same vicinity?
It was in the Northwood building, too, right above the drugstore.
Mm-hmm. So on
only
the second
floor. Instead of it being on the second floor, it was on the third floor.
Oh, mm-hmm. So you did that for several years.
Yes.
In the meantime, I guess your daughters, when they got to be old enough, helped out in the drugstore?
They started work in the drugstore when they were about 12 years old. In fact, my youngest daughter had to stand on a box to wrap Christmas packages.
Is that Frederica?
No, that's
Kate. Oh. Mm-hmm.
They both worked, though. They both started in dusting and they learned to stock shelves and to do anything that was needed.
Sure.
They come to work after they got out of school.
So you always knew where they were.
Well, It was very good training for
him. And good training, I just say that. Mm-hmm. I think.
And with me there and with their dad there, we had a pretty good eye on him.
Yeah. I guess, well, being a business person downtown, you would certainly see a lot of interesting people and I guess get to know quite a few characters that would come in and out. And do you remember, anything in particular, some memorable customers who are probably long gone that you've dealt with that you had a unique relationship with?
Almost everybody in town at that time. And as the town grew, of course, there were people that weren't our personal customers, but we did a lot of charge business, especially at first.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask
you that. Because people worked from 1 year to the next, and the summer was the employment season.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them put any business they did in the winter on a charge card, and then they would pay their bill in the spring or when they started back to work. Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty common, I guess, in a lot of businesses, because there was no...
It was common in the grocery stores, and it was common in businesses.
Mm-hmm. So it was just...
People were very honest, and you could depend on them.
So you
when they
to get
started
your money.
To get some money, then they started to pay.
That really was essential for the survival of the town.
That's right.
To have that kind of trust... with one another, is pretty tough to have a family and not have winter employment.
Well, it was difficult, and yet so much of the payroll around the town was mining, and the mines just didn't have the payroll in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
There were a few key employees that they could paid all winter long, but not too many of them.
Yeah. And there's just so many part-time or temporary jobs available that I guess some people were lucky enough to get winter work, but not everybody. So. Yeah, actually, I read something not too long ago in the News Miner, in Terrence Cole's column, about a young boy that your husband saved. Could you elaborate on that? I think you know probably what I'm talking about.
The pharmacy counter was in the back of the store, and the candy counter was in the front, and Mac looked up, and he saw this boy choking. And he was getting groggy because he couldn't get any air, and he called one of the help to call the clinic and tell him that he was bringing an emergency in, and he ran up and grabbed the kid and carried him under his arm over to the clinic, which at that time was on...
On Fifth Avenue?
No, it was on Fourth Avenue.
Oh, that would be Fairbanks Clinic.
Well, it wasn't the big one. It was when it was in the middle of the block.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I know which one, and where the bank is now.
It was behind where McKinley Bank is now.
Right, yeah.
And...
So just across the street.
There were three or four steps going up, and he had the boy tipped with his head down to clear the air passages if he could. And the gumball, or jawbreaker as they called him,
mm-hmm.
came out just as he went up the steps.
Cheers. Oh, he just rolled out.
Well, by tipping him up, it shook it out.
Shook it out, right, yeah. She had some interesting dogs in the neighborhood, too. Could you tell me about the dog that was kind of a permanent fixture in the area?
Well, most of the dogs were permanent fixtures, but this one would walk down the hall and wait to see if there was anyone around the candy counter. And he would come in the back door and up to the front of the store, swipe the candy bar, and he always took the same kind of bars, and then out the front door. And he would actually watch to see that there was nobody around to stop him.
And he was too fast on his feet, I guess, to get apprehended.
He never raced or anything like that. He'd just very nonchalantly walk up there and swipe this particular kind of candy bar that he liked.
Was it a chocolate bar?
Well, my husband could tell you exactly the kind of bar.
Would be a good advertisement for Mars Candy Bar. Oh, that's great.
But he was a cute dog.
So he knew we could get by with
it. Well, we had a customer that used to come in, and he brought his dog, and the dog would lay down outside in the hall until he got ready to go. And he never had to call him or anything. The minute he started for the door, the dog would get up and come in and follow him out. But you got to know the dogs that were town characters. There was one dog that used to catch the bus out to Ladd Field. And he knew where the bus was going to load. And he'd go get on and he'd take it out to Ladd Field. He'd be out there for a while. And then he would catch the bus back to town. And there was one that actually hitched rides on the airplanes, the bush planes.
Oh, for goodness.
Or whether he knew where he was going when he caught the plane, I don't know. But he would take a plane out of town and
hide in the baggage.
Well, people knew him, and they knew that he'd be back, and he was no trouble. He was not a problem
just
on the plane.
A little variety in his life. That's great.
Well, he might have been going to see someone. You don't know.
A dog in the other village. Oh. Well, I guess things went along fairly smoothly in the 50s. At least you hear them as kind of the good years everywhere, but 1967 is a year that we'll all remember when the flood hit. And
well, 64 was rather shaky, too. That was when they had the earthquake in Anchorage.
Oh, and you felt it up here.
Yes. But we didn't have the damage that they did down on the coast.
So it was mostly things knocked off the shelves?
Very little of that. It was a rolling type of earthquake up here. We had had earthquakes that shook merchandise off the shelf. And we turned the fixtures around and didn't lose anything after that. The direction that the fixtures
apparently
were,
just rode with the quake.
There was a difference in the intensity and the way that it shook.
I'll be darned, So that was sort of a precursor of what was yet to come.
Actually, Fairbanks was in a pretty good financial situation when that Anchorage earthquake came, and they did a lot to refinance Anchorage.
Really helped out.
Yes. And then it was pretty bad when they had the flood.
You say that was their
3 years later
chance to help us out. How much water did you have in the store? Up to about 3 feet?
The basement where we had our merchandise stored was full.
Oh, yeah. At least if you had things below ground level, there was nothing that could be salvaged.
We had over 18 inches in the drugstore.
Not much time to prepare for it, I guess.
Well, actually,
just didn't think it would hit that fast.
The announcements over the radio kept saying that the river was going to crest at so many feet, and if you knew how high your location was, you judged it accordingly, but they missed the estimate of how where the river was going to crest. And the water that came through town hit areas that weren't as high, but didn't take as much water because of the direction of the water.
So by the time things really hit, I guess some people had to get out in a row or a riverboat. Were you at that point? Or
no, but our truck was totaled by a riverboat right in front of the store.
You were parked legally.
We were parked legally. A riverboat came down the street. And
had a head-on collision? Or
just took the windshield out of the truck.
So the truck was
parked right in front of the drugstore.
And so just the windshield and the hood would have been above water?
Yeah.
So they didn't see what was underneath. It was like hitting an iceberg a little bit.
Oh, there was a picture on the front of the nose miner that showed that.
Yeah, it's not often that there's a collision between a riverboat and a truck.
That's right. Not the head-on collision.
Head-on collision. So people that were certainly in that area were the hardest hit in terms of the amount of water and just the cleanup afterwards.
We had water at our home. We had water in the drugstore. We had the warehouse was flooded.
That was down below.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And actually, during the time that we were in business, we had two lengthy boat strikes. We had two fires. Earthquakes, there were about three earthquakes that affected us, not very badly, but then we had the flood.
Yeah.
So people don't need to complain to me about how that business
how business is today. You had to cope with all the natural and man-made disasters, too. So how long did it take you to get back into business after cleaning up? Well, after the flood, it was in August.
Well, it was a long time. Whenever you deal with the government, they can do lots of things on an emergency basis. But if you go into it from a business angle, it took a long time to get that straightened around.
Mm-hmm. But in
10 years, we paid off every dime.
Oh, so you had an SBA loan a lot of people had.
Yes.
Yeah, that's commendable. That was a big bite to take.
Yes, it was. And just before Christmas, we were getting Christmas merchandise when that flood hit.
Oh.
So not only did we have the regular merchandise, but we also had a lot of our Christmas orders.
And then Christmas would have been a pretty big time for you.
You figured that your Christmas business would probably be two-thirds of your total business for the year. And if you get the merchandise to do that business, it's a good portion of what you can make in the whole year.
Yeah, so that was really a second blow, really, to have that.
Well, yes.
To have that.
Yes, it wouldn't have been nearly as costly.
If it had happened
in the spring as it did in the fall.
Mm-hmm. Before getting the Christmas. So you stayed in business until...
We were in business over 30 years.
30 years. So when did you retire, or Mac retire?
Well, he didn't actually retire until after the drugstore had been closed for some time. He went to work in the co-op drug. Mm-hmm. There was a shortage of pharmacists, and he was well known, and they wanted him to work there, and he did, until he really didn't feel like he was able to be on his feet that long anymore.
Yeah, it's a long time. It's,
yes.
Standing
yes,
all
when
the time.
You figured that our day wasn't just an eight-hour day, ever. The store was open either 10 or 12, sometimes more hours than that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we were open 16 hours at a time.
And usually 6 days a week?
7 days a week.
7 days
a week.
Well, that's working hard. Well, there have been a lot of changes in the business community downtown. A lot of the small town businesses are gone and replaced by some of these chain stores from outside. It's really changed the complexion of Fairbanks quite a bit.
Oh, yes. It's much more impersonal. A lot of the people didn't want to live in the downtown area, and they bought property out in the hills, and I don't blame them.
Yeah, so it's just, you represent an era that we only know from history, and it's really what made Fairbanks what it is, to have a good, strong, local business space. And
well, it was fun. You knew everybody that was in business, and you knew your customers, and you knew the people you were doing business with, and they were really wonderful.
Sounds like a wonderful relationship.
We had the best, nicest customers in the world. And you couldn't have asked for anything anymore.
And they had nice business or store owners, too, so it was a nice relationship.
I never saw a prettier store.
Well, thank you very much for talking to me today. I've enjoyed hearing about your early years in Fairbanks.